Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, appropriately enough. I hope you've all had a great week. Certainly lots of hot, steamy weather here in New York City, where I call home. Lots of great competition in the Summer Olympics over in England. Certainly we're rooting for Americans to do the best they can do. Michael Phelps scores incredible records, now owns more Olympic medals than any swimmer in history. So, you know, we're happy to see Americans and hopefully America do well, and that's what this program is about. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. But in point of fact, I'm now retired from the INS, but my goal, and has been my goal since the terrorist attacks of 9/11, is to provide my perspectives on how failures of the immigration system, failures to secure our borders, and everything else have contributed not only to the terrorist attacks of 9/11, but have imperiled not only national security, but community safety, and has hammered so many of the other challenges that America and Americans face today. If you want to read more about me, my background, please go to my personal website, michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I'm also very proud to tell you that I'm a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org. That's one word, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write for them. They are located, as I like to point out, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara on the West Coast. Great place to visit. I've been there a number of times, always enjoy myself. But there they are on the West Coast. Here I am on the East Coast. And finally, I have a new website that I'm also very excited about called TalkBorder.com. It's one word, TalkBorder, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R. Pardon me. And I have posted a number of exciting video interviews with guests ranging from Congressman Lou Barletta of Pennsylvania, United States Congressman, most recently a young lady by the name of Farhana Kazi, former CIA analyst and an expert on international terrorism, especially where the Middle East is concerned, and quite a few other guests on that website. So please go to talkborder.com. And speaking about guests and speaking about videos brings me to a very unusual guest who's joining me tonight. He's become a good friend. His name is Mark Hager. And Mark is a history professor in North Carolina. But he just got back from the Arizona area where he was on the border checking out for himself and ultimately for all of us, because he brought some video gear with him, so that we can find out just how secure the borders are or aren't. And before I bring him on, I just want to call all of your attention to two recent op-ed pieces that I did for Fox News Latino. On July 28th, they posted an op-ed that I wrote called The Sky-High Costs of President Obama's Immigration Dream. They were focused in the news about what it would cost to administer the immigration laws the way he wants to twist them. It's not really the law. Immigration lawlessness, perhaps, would be more appropriate. But they talked about $585 million. What was kind of startling to me was the headline that the AP reporter put on it was the cost of his deportation program. Well, in point of fact, he's not looking to deport anybody, but give employment authorization to 1 million illegal aliens per year. Interestingly, the news today just carried a story about how we need to create 1 million new jobs a year because there were 13 million unemployed Americans, and here the president wants to give 1 million illegal aliens employment authorization, creating a clearly unfair and outrageous competition for American workers who can't support themselves and are losing their homes to foreclosure, losing their thin slice to the American dream. In fact, 60 Minutes last week said that one in four American kids now lives below the poverty line. They're living in the back of cars and trucks. wrote another article for Caps that presumably will be posted shortly. And then the other article, and this is the perfect segue for Mark, was the piece that was just posted yesterday at Fox News Latino, Opinion, Drawing the Line on National Security. I don't know if you folks know it, but just a couple days ago, Janet Napolitano, the head of DHS, an agency that I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, said that from time to time, terrorists have probably entered the United States by running the Mexican border. And to give you a little teaser out of the article that I wrote, I said that that statement that we've had terrorists, quote-unquote, from time to time run our borders, but yet the borders are secure, is a bit like saying that a city with a high crime rate is safe during the intervals between the times that crimes are committed. I don't know any other way of putting it, and if people wonder why nobody believes our officials anymore, Janet Napolitano, I doubt you're listening, but if you are, look in the mirror if you wonder why people no longer trust our government. Mark Hager, welcome to the show. Happy Friday.
Well, it's good to be on the show again, and hope everyone is doing well up there where you are.
I love your southern accent. You know, I was just speaking to Mark on speakerphone while I was having dinner before I came on the program tonight, and my son said, "Boy, Dad, he sure has a southern accent." I said, "Yes, but he would say we have a Brooklyn accent, so I guess we're even."
Well, as long as y'all keep it in perspective.
And at the end of the day, whether we're from the north or the south, the east or the west, no matter what your beliefs are, at the end of the day, we are all Americans. And that should be the unifying factor for every one of those of us who are proud to call ourselves citizens of this great nation, all 300 million of us.
Yes, especially as long as we can keep it into some dialect of English. Then we're
you
okay.
You betcha. Otherwise, what we have here is a failure to communicate, and we're certainly not communicating too well with Washington. Mark, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, and then I want to hear about the trip, because I purposely didn't talk to you about the trip before, because I want to hear, along with my audience, what you saw, what you experienced, and what your thoughts are.
Well, I mean, my background is all, you know, it's primarily been in history. Of course, you know, you swore an oath to defend this Constitution, the same as I did. I served in the military.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
And you know, years back, and from there, you know, progressed on. I've had some work in the business world too, but all in all, going back to school eventually to become a teacher, and then moved right on into graduate school and teaching in college. And so, North Carolina, Southern history, Southern colonial, all those good Southern classes, you know, and as well as a whole gamut of others, such as archaeology and et cetera. So, and, you know,
I majored
like
in et cetera, by the way, you should know.
Say what? You majored in et cetera?
I majored in et cetera.
Well, teaching has been something that, you know, no matter what occupation that I've had in the past, and I've done quite a few things from surveying to, I mean, you name it, and everywhere that I went, people say, you know, you should teach history. So,
and you took them up on it.
Yeah, so eventually I went that direction, and, you know, we even remarked when we were in Arizona, the crew that I had, the film crew, met,
yep.
That was a total of four of us that were down there, and remarking that, you know, just 2 to 3 years ago, none of us would have had in our radar anything of this magnitude that we've gotten ourselves involved with.
You know, I just wanted to make one point, and I think it's important. You know, you heard what I said about the way that the news covers things, the way this gal who wrote the article about Obama's plan, what he called prosecutorial discretion, I came to call prosecutorial deception.
Mm-hmm.
When I spoke before a bunch of military folks, I called it prosecutorial excretion. I'm so frustrated with it. But there was a news program that used to air Friday nights way back when I was in high school. And it was on one of the major news networks. I wish I could remember which one. I think it was CBS. But every week, the announcer would start out by saying that history is the news that's worth remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And as a history teacher, I'm sure you would agree with it. But we're not even getting accurate news any longer. You really have to wonder what history books are going to look like in the future. As it is, there are revisionists at work almost daily, it would seem. But the issue for me has been how American citizens have been so lazy, neglectful, more concerned with who's winning the Olympics or who's winning Dancing with the Stars than what's going on in Washington, which affects their futures and their children and grandchildren's futures. Mm-hmm. Don't you, as an American, as a guy who served in the military and as a history professor, find it very discouraging and frustrating that not enough Americans are really involved and engaged in trying to learn as much as they can from reliable news sources?
Well, that's, you know, that has been a case, you know, kind of the more that you read history, the more that you realize that people have often been that way. If you go back to the War of 1812, for instance, and you had a, if you remember the president's wife, if you remember her name, that escaped out of the White House carrying the unfinished portrait of George Washington. You remember
I
that?
Would, I think it was Dolly Madison.
That's correct. And
hey, look at
people,
that. And by the way, folks, this was absolutely an unexpected quiz that I just got from Professor Hager here. So I hope I pleased you, Professor.
Yes, but one of the things that the people were really in tune to try to find out was that here's the president running out in her underwear. It wasn't the unfinished portrait of George Washington. It was people were going, my gosh, she's doing what? And so the more I look at it, you know, many Americans would rather find out with what's happening with, what was her name, Anna Nicole Smith or something like that?
Anna Nicole Smith or Paris Hilton.
Spears.
Paris Hilton was another one. Yep. And who's the gal that keeps getting locked up for drug abuse and acting badly? And Charlie Sheen has a meltdown on stage, and people line up and pay good money to see him have a meltdown on stage.
And then, of course, everyone knows who was the blonde so-called actress of the 1960s.
Yep.
That had a relationship with just about everybody, including the president.
And it's the 50th anniversary of her death that's coming up soon. That was Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
I think she was an actress. I will give her that. But it's always been about, you know, the seamier side of humanity that seems to attract the attention rather than the things we should really be focused on.
Not until something really happens.
But something did happen.
And that's the sad part.
You know, 9/11 happened, and, you know, we saw those towers come down, and I know for the rest of the country it was just a news story. Here in New York, I will take a moment just to say this, and when you come to New York, and I know you're expecting to be at the Big Apple, I will take you to Ground Zero. But I want you to know what it was like, because the ashes covered New York City. My house was like a snowstorm almost. My neighbors were out that night wandering in the streets. They were sitting on the sidewalk in front of my house. They were crying. They were screaming. They didn't know where their children were. They didn't know where their parents were. They didn't know where their husbands or their wives or their best friends were. You look at that situation, and you think, what does it take to get our attention? We were attacked at Pearl Harbor, Mark, and you and I both know that in 44 months, 3,000 people were killed at Pearl Harbor. It took 44 months. We went to war. We worked with some dubious allies like Russia. We built fleets of airplanes that had never existed before, fleets of ships, radar, communications equipment. We even built atomic weapons with brand new technology. And 44 months later, it was over. We are now facing a war on terror. And in fact, 9/11 wasn't the first terrorist attack committed on our soil. In 1993, we had two terrorist attacks. First, a guy by the name of Amir Kansi shot up the CIA, killed two CIA officers, and wounded three others just after we, our country, gave him political asylum. He was a Pakistani, even though he lied through his teeth on his application. 1 month later, February 26, 1993, a bunch of Middle Eastern terrorists who all gamed the visa process and a number of them gamed the immigration benefits program came into our country, attacked the World Trade Center, almost brought the tower down sideways. Those towers stretched almost a quarter of a mile into the sky. They were vertical cities. Had they come down sideways, probably hundreds of thousands would have died. Lower Manhattan likely would have been flooded. It would have knocked out the trains and the car tunnels connecting New York from New Jersey and Brooklyn from Manhattan. Lower Manhattan might still be uninhabitable. And reaction, our government did nothing. And then you look at 9/11. And I don't know if you remember, Mark, but March of 2002, it was discovered that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, and Atta was one of the ringleaders, had been granted authorization 6 months to the day after the attacks, after they were not only identified as terrorists but were killed, they were sent permission to change immigration status so they could go to flight school. I mean, it was mind-boggling. Congress held a hearing. I was one of the four witnesses called before Congress. And CAPS, Californians of Population Stabilization, just posted another article that I just wrote, because it now turns out that recently it was called to the attention of our government that 25 illegal aliens were getting flight instruction now. And by the way, the owner of the flight school was himself an illegal alien.
Shocking, isn't it?
I mean, so and a year earlier, they talked about 27 people who were on the terror watch list being removed as pilots, even though they had, and they went into this whole list of how many thousands of people with pilot's licenses did not have matching Social Security numbers, and that was just 1 year ago. But meanwhile, 85-year-old woman sitting in a wheelchair with an adult diaper because she's just in such terrible health, probably, unfortunately, at the end of her life, at the fading days of her life, gets strip-searched and groped. A four-year-old girl who goes running back to grandma to give her a hug before she gets on the airplane gets whisked away to be patted down and searched and God knows what, because God knows that four-year-old might have been planning to take over the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, we're giving pilots licenses, and we don't know who's getting them, so we have these nice secure doors on the cockpit. What scares the hell out of me, Mark, is that one of these days, it's going to turn out that the guy in the cockpit is the biggest threat to the people who are now sitting on what has become a de facto cruise missile.
And no way to get to him.
And how do you get into the United States? Well, Janet Napolitano said, from time to time. And, you know, my point in my article for Fox was, well, if our border is so secure, how do the drugs come here? And maybe you can answer that question, because you were there, weren't you?
Oh, yes. And,
so what did you see, and what were your thoughts? I mean, I'm dying. I've been waiting all week to get this report from you.
Well, if you wanted to summarize it really quick, it was that there is no border security. If you wanted to break that down in bits.
Go for it. Take your time. And, folks, I want you to pay attention to this, please. You know, you said there's no border security. It reminds me of a conversation I had with a congressman. He said, I hear there's no morale, there's terrible morale issue in immigration. I said, hardly. He said, how is it possible? I said, that which doesn't exist can't be a problem. So I'm forced to think of that when you say, well, if you worry about border security, there is none.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we spend in one area that had known cartel activity. I mean,
you were in Arizona, weren't you?
Yes, we were in Arizona. And primarily, but not always, we were in Cochise County, Arizona, on the border with Mexico. So, you know, for people who are listening or trying to find it on a map, you know, the cities of Douglas, Arizona, Nogales, those are epicenters where they know that really bad things are happening, and drugs of the size and scope that, you know, here in North Carolina, you just can't imagine that are coming in. So you would think that the easy way to stop it is that you have people there at the border to make sure they don't cross in. But we were at known parts of the border in one area for 3 hours plus, didn't see a single border security person anywhere within miles. And you can see in those areas of Arizona, you can see 16 miles one way, 20 miles another way, and there was nothing. And then if you put it in another perspective, on one ranch that we were on, this is the part that will get people really upset. You have a pretty secure border. It would be kind of the area to where you have the best fence when they talk of a fence on the border, one of the better ones. Okay, and this fence, I mean, you know, you'll have to work a little bit. I mean, it may take you about 15 seconds to cross it instead of, say, 3 seconds. But that's a fence. That's another story. But at that fence one night, well, let's fast forward it. A rancher gets up. Picture this is your land. This is your cattle and things are on your ranch. You get up in the morning, look out, and you see something's not right. So you ride out, and you notice that your fences are down and that there is another road that's been cut on your ranch that you haven't ever seen before. So you get on that road, and then you follow it down to the fence of the international border, and you see where cartel activity had taken place, where they brought welding torches and you name it, and just cut out a whole section of the border fence And then they were just driving across your ranch all through the night with who knows how many tons of cocaine and methamphetamines and you name it coming across.
Or maybe, or potentially a weapon of mass destruction.
In fact, the rancher brought that up, says you could have had just truckloads of that stuff and nothing would have happened. And then you look behind you and you say, well, wait a minute, the Border Patrol's got cameras set up looking right at that part of the fence.
And I want to make a point before you go on because I don't want to forget to make the point. You said they used cutting torches, correct?
Yeah, you can't just do it fast.
All right, now, but here's my point. Mm-hmm. Those cameras supposedly have night vision capability.
They do.
All right. Now, night vision relies on infrared heat. Mm-hmm. Do you realize, folks, that if you turn on a cutting torch at night, it is going to look like a dazzling sun sitting there on the floor of the desert?
Right.
How do you miss seeing that? This
you
isn't
don't.
A guy with a hacksaw, like in a prison break, slowly cutting through some steel or whatever. A cutting torch generates heat in the thousands of degrees. It will show up as a searing white light. There's just no way of not seeing it in night vision. It would be blinding, in fact, to anybody with night vision goggles.
Well, how do you have the cameras up and you can't see them out there with chainsaws cutting out part of your ranch so they could put a new road in?
Oh, I agree. But all I'm saying is even if, let's say, well, it's dark, it's this, it's that. If they, once you turn on that cutting torch, it's going to show up brilliant white, and if anyone is using night vision goggles, he's probably going to have burnt retinas. That's how bright it is in night vision.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then, if like anyone would do, you would get on the phone and call the supervisor of the Border Patrol and say, hey, you know, the border has been broken through, and they've been using my ranch, and they built a whole new road crossing my ranch. And we're not talking about a road that's going to go for like 100 yards. This is a long road, just about as far as you can see, connecting to one of his other roads on his ranch, all with the cameras running. And then the supervisor notifies him, says, oh, well, our cameras were off that night.
What?
Mm-hmm. And the rancher...
What a coincidence.
And the rancher in anger says, so you know what you're saying, don't you? And that guy on the other end of the line says, yes. And
wow.
That's your border protection, and that's... And that's not to where many of these ranchers feel that there isn't any federal protection taking place. And that's just one of a long list of stories. In fact, we had been out there to film this whole episode. And we left to go to a second ranch. And then we're called back because it had been busted through again. And a Nissan Titan crew cab with cartel operatives in it had busted through another one of its fences and took off. We got back as fast as we could to see the damage and got there in time for the sheriff deputy to arrive on the scene. And, of course, we got all this in footage. And he is.
Why do you suspect it was cartel?
Well, they know that through that area that when you look at the coyotes who were placing themselves across the hills around
right.
the Hachuca Mountains and Chiricahua Mountains all around
area. I've been through that area, by the way, so I'm very familiar with what you're talking about.
And then, plus, you trace the trail right back, and it goes right through. We'll put it this way. There, this time of year, it floods in parts of Arizona. They have a rainy season.
Right.
It's not much of a rainy season. But the Border Patrol responds is that they don't like debris getting caught in the border fence, so they open up gates all over the fence, wide open. And they say that they will keep a person monitoring them for as long as they stay open. So I ask, well, how long do they stay open? The rancher says 3 months.
Oh, my word.
I said, 3 months? and then they said, and you've been here for several hours. How many Border Patrol have you seen here watching?
None.
There wasn't anybody there. And, in fact, we had left, and we were laughing about that, and we get a call to turn around and – and you had a truck break through, went right through the gates, and then knocked out its fences again, sixth time in so many weeks that he's had to go back and repair its fences, and never caught. It won't ever be in the newspaper. You won't find it in the local news, and you won't find it on the national media.
And meanwhile, by the way, here's another story. This was on Fox News. it was called to my attention by a good friend, Bruce Dussel, former New York City police officer, whose son-in-law was one of those obliterated on 9/11. He was at the World Trade Center. And the article headline, and this was just posted a couple days ago, ICE agent, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent, faces suspension for arresting an illegal alien.
I saw that.
Now, I mean, I want you to stop and think about it. And as I read the article, and here's something that I want everybody to understand. You know, I spent 30 years with the INS. 26 of those years, I was a special agent. Half of my 26 years, or more than half, I was with the Drug Task Force. I spent nearly 4 years with the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA, and then I became a senior special agent. I was assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. I've arrested terrorists and murderers in my career, as well as drug dealers. In fact, when I was at DEA Intelligence, Mark, I think we've talked about this, Mark and his family were kind enough to provide me with a spare room so I could stay in their beautiful home when I was in North Carolina just a few months ago. And at night after dinner, we'd sit around in the living room and talk to the wee small hours. And when I was at DEA Intelligence, I decided to figure out who we were arresting, and I was startled to find out that in New York City, back then, this was 88 to about 91, 92, and the statistics remained constant for years after, something on the order of 60%, 60% of the people arrested in New York City for drug-related crimes by the DEA were identified as being foreign-born back then. Mm-hmm. So you look at this lunacy, and you realize that interior enforcement is critical, and we've never had interior enforcement. There's about 18,000 Border Patrol agents for the country. We need more. But we have about 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country, and more than half of them are doing customs, not immigration work. And when they do immigration work, for the most part, it seems it's to give employment authorization to illegal aliens. Because the circumstances surrounding this guy who's in trouble, this agent who has 18 years in, he wasn't some rookie who went off without thinking. He knew what he was doing.
He actually was trained.
Well, they were surveilling a car that was wanted because the owner, the registered owner of the vehicle, was wanted as a felon. Okay? Show me your friends, I'll tell you who you are. So as they're sitting on this car doing surveillance, and I can't tell you how many times I've done this, guy gets into the car, drives off, they stop him. They get him out of the car, they arrest him as being a suspect. They didn't know what the guy was that they were looking for, who he was. They thought maybe this was the guy. They run fingerprints and find out, nope, he's not the target of their investigation. But he's an illegal alien who has been arrested numerous times for driving without a license and committing other relatively minor crimes. But again, understand, he's behind the wheel of a car of a suspect in a serious crime. Show me your friends, I'll tell you who you are. Now, in the old days, this would not have been an issue. The guy's an illegal alien anyway. He's a collateral arrest. That's how you have deterrence, where if you're in the wrong place on the wrong day, you get arrested, and the message is clear. If you're here illegally, if you run the border, or we have 5 million or more illegals who came in through ports of entry and violate the terms of their admission, as did most of the terrorists, by the way. In fact, they all violated the terms of their admission through their actions. So understand that this guy is subject to arrest. It's not like he arrested an American citizen, and it's like, oh, my God, what did you do? The guy was an illegal alien. And his bosses said, well, he has no convictions for serious crimes. He said, well, let a judge make that decision. This guy is in violation of our laws. He shouldn't be here. There's some doubt as to what his real identity is. He's driving the car of a subject of a criminal investigation. Obviously, he's up to something that's not good. Let's just put him before a judge. And that was enough for this guy to now find himself in the position where he may lose his job. Now, if you look at what this does, it does a bunch of things. Number one, aspiring illegal aliens around the world are looking to see what we're doing. You know, it's the way that people want the playbook of the opposing team. If you're a baseball player or a football, if you have a team that you're going against, you want to know what their tactics are. You want to know what the enemy is doing when we talk about the army. And that's why we have spies and intelligence offices and spy satellites. It's spy versus spy. What is this guy doing? What is that guy doing? So they're looking. Well, the message now to aspiring illegal aliens and alien smugglers around the world is very clear. If you can get across the border, and you certainly bear evidence to how easy that is, and we're going to go back to your discussion in a minute, but I just wanted to interject this, then it's pretty easy to come here. Once you get here, we have a president who has said, we'll give you employment authorization. that's good for 2 years. All you have to do is claim that you came as a child and claim that you got here before you were 16, I believe it is, that you're less than 30 years old, and we will give you employment authorization. They're not even going to check documentation, according to what a union president said, because Senator Sessions had a news conference about 10 days ago, brought in some union leaders who said that the officials at Citizenship and Immigration Services were told, take applications at face value, don't even worry about supporting documents. So people could lie about their real names. They could lie about their countries of citizenship. They can lie about how old they were when they came here and when they came here. And we will give them identity documents that immediately will allow them to get driver's licenses and social security cards, open bank accounts, do whatever they want to do under names that they claim relate to them. You should also know that just about all the names on terror watch lists, and this was a discussion that I had with a young lady by the name of Rahana Kazi, who I did a video interview with. It's on talkborder.com. We just posted it. Those names, for the most part, on the terror watch list and no-fly list have no biometric. So it's just about names. So if a known terrorist can change his name to a new identity, he can easily or she can easily defeat the terror watch list at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a president saying, if you come here, we want to give you employment authorization to the tune of 1 million illegal aliens per year. Ironically, CBS News said we need to create 1 million new jobs a year just to keep up with the devastation of the economy that continues to spiral downward. No one's talking about the impact of Obama's plan. And then once you get beyond the border, if no one's going to arrest you, you're home free. So why on earth would anybody not run the border? You almost have to wonder, how dumb do you have to be to follow the law? Because people that follow the law go through an arduous process of filing applications, and they have to go to attorneys, and it costs a ton of money, and they have to spend a lot of time, where we have a president who says, oh, well, that's for the people that are dumb enough to be legal. If you're here illegal, we'll put you on the express path, you know, like the commuter lanes we have for on the highways. We're going to put you on that express lane if you're an illegal alien and if you claim you can't prove that when you got here. So now you add to this what they're doing to these Border Patrol agents and the agents. Do you think any ICE agent is going to look to make any more arrests after they see what happened to this colleague of theirs? If I was still on duty and I saw that, let me tell you, I wouldn't even bother bringing my handcuffs with me to work.
Yeah, that's a problem that is occurring not just with ICE agents, but it's occurring within the sheriff's offices, because, you know, like Arizona and now Virginia has been added to that too, that because of the Supreme Court ruling on behalf of SB 1070, then they're denying, if you're a law enforcement guy in Arizona and you apprehend somebody and want to check, what do they call it within law enforcement, the 287G?
287G is gone.
Yeah,
and that's
they
gone.
Don't even, they won't let them even look it up to find out if they are or not.
Now, I'll tell you how stupid. Well, the one thing that they did uphold, and, you know, I had a part of the action because I worked with a law firm that was retained by Governor Brewer to try to defend themselves. I said, look, when a police officer pulls you over or stops you because you're a person of interest or you're acting suspiciously, the first requirement in any law enforcement situation is to identify the person you stopped. That's why we fingerprint people. That's why they're using retina scans and other high-tech biometrics. And by the way, I raised that issue for the first time when I did my first hearing back in 97, because they held a hearing over 4 years after those two terrorist attacks we started out talking about in 93, both at the CIA and the Trade Center. The Democratic Party, and I'm a registered Democrat, I don't even know whatever happened to my party, it went off the rails, they would not hold a hearing. So it wasn't until the Republicans took office that a guy by the name of Henry Hyde, who chaired the House Judiciary Committee, and Lamar Smith, who is now the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, held a hearing into visa fraud and benefit fraud because of those two cases. I was called to that hearing, and I talked about the need for biometrics to prevent imposters from getting away with it and so forth. This was 4 years before 9/11. So understand where we are now. The police have the imperative of determining the identity of somebody that they stop. Number one, they're looking to find out if the person has any outstanding warrants. Number two, they want to make certain that the guy's going to show up. You know, if a police officer stops you for speeding, it may sound funny, but it's actually a courtesy to give you a ticket. because under the law they could arrest you. So they give you a summons with the expectation you're going to show up. If they don't think you're going to show up to traffic court, then they're supposed to put handcuffs on you to make sure you do, just like any other violation of law. So basically they're holding a bail hearing in the street. So if you stop somebody who can't speak the English language, who has no ID, you're not even sure if he didn't steal the car, he's driving without a license, which creates an immediate danger to public safety. There was a terrible case, Don Rosenberg, whose son in California was killed by an unlicensed driver from El Salvador, run over three times. The kid was on a motorcycle, 25-year-old law student. He has an illegal alien, he was given temporary protected status. God knows how he came here. ICE won't tell him. Runs the kid over not once, but three times. Initially doesn't hurt him badly, but in trying to flee, kills him. And so understand that we're talking about illegal aliens driving on American roads without licenses. Well, the police are supposed to protect us. How on earth can they protect us if they don't have the tools to properly identify those people who come here who may want to do us grievous harm? I mean, it's as fundamental as that. How can a law enforcement officer do the job that he or she was sworn to do when they are being stymied by their own government that thinks that an illegal alien apparently is entitled to more protection under the law than United States citizens and lawful immigrants who have abided by the laws, did everything they were supposed to do, only to find out that the greatest measures of protection don't apply to citizens and lawful immigrants, but to illegal aliens? And that's what happened during the amnesty of 86 under Reagan. The applications for amnesty were shielded from review by other law enforcement agencies. I had cases where FBI agents came to me and said, Mike, and I was part of the task force, I was working with the Bureau, we need to have the file on Joe Smith. We think he's involved with a couple of homicides. I had the file, but under the law, I couldn't give it to them. I said, you're going to have to go to court and get the federal judge to order that the file be released to you. Now, what's remarkable is if the alien in question had not been an amnesty alien but had become a naturalized citizen, if I didn't immediately turn over the file, I could have been criminally charged with obstructing an administration, the governmental administration, and obstructing an official investigation. But because the guy we were looking at was an illegal alien who got amnesty, I could have gone to jail if I simply handed the file over to the FBI. Now, understand how we have twisted reality and common sense on its ear. It started with the amnesty of 86 under Reagan, and it has picked up speed and has accelerated to the point that, am I unreasonable in saying we now have anarchy along our borders as well as within the interior? Would you agree that this is anarchy?
Well, I don't know what else you could refer to it as. When some of the things that we have seen on the border, you just, at first you're angry, and then, you know, you end up no other way to go but just to laugh. Put it this way, you have that same place where that truck came through the border that I was just telling you about.
Right.
Well, not long after that happened, in fact, we were getting ready to fly back, and the rancher called and says, you're not going to believe this. The Army Corps of Engineers is out here. Instead of it being 7 feet 4 inches wide, they need to make it 14 feet wide.
What?
And the Army Corps of Engineers told the rancher, we don't understand this. There is not that much debris going to come from any wash from the so-called rainy season. But under orders from the Border Patrol, they were to go in, not just there, but in other places, to make the gates wider.
Do you know that the Bureau of Land Management posted signs? In fact, Jerry Sieper, the Washington Times, quoted me. And I got so angry when I read about how swaths of land in that border region, well north of the border, have signs posted warning that motorists might encounter armed smugglers driving at high rates of speed, so they should stay out of the area. And I said that we're at the point where maybe we need to change the color of Old Glory from red, white, and blue to just fundamental white, basic white, the flag of surrender. Did you encounter any of those signs?
Oh, yes. Those, and that one that's even more shocking is that it actually states that the reason you could face these kinds of incidents is because of the, quote, close proximity to the border.
But there's no violence spilling over the border, according to Napolitano.
Right.
Do you believe that?
Well, I mean, I don't know why in her mind she would think that way. But yes.
Do you have any pictures of those signs?
Oh, yes. We sure do.
Bring them with you to New York. I want to show this to some folks. I mean, I want to understand, with all this emphasis on too much salt and sugar in our diets, why we don't see any notices at all in the news about concerns about heroin, cocaine, or crack. Do you find that remarkable?
Yes. I mean, there is. Well, the part that I was kind of stunned about was talking with these ranchers and some of the things that we saw.
What did you say? Give me your top five list. If you had a top five, what would be a top five of the things you saw that left you scratching your head and said, what on earth is going on here?
Okay, the amount of drugs that's still being seized, the incidents that are happening here in this part of North Carolina. If somebody ran through your fences, hit some of your cattle, and then took off at a high speed and disappeared, well, that's going to be in the news or in the newspaper. And to have incidents like this happening, and it's not, if you didn't see it, it never happened. Or if it's not reported, it's the way it goes now. If you don't report it, then it never did happen. And so if you take one rancher and then multiply it by five, the five other ranchers, and each one reporting the same things, then you get really upset looking at it, because everything that we see on TV is one. Every illegal alien in the United States is all running back to Mexico because they can't find any work here.
Did you find any people running back to Mexico?
There's no. But why would anybody want to cross into Mexico when Mexico actually does have good border security, and that's the drug cartels?
Yep. And by the way, the carnage, was it 50,000
killed? Yeah, why would you want to slip back
killed?
Why would you slip back into that mess? And then the other one, you mentioned like the top five. I didn't realize that we've stopped all work visa programs. So if you want to come into Mexico and do it the right way and avoid the cartels, that the government has now shut that off.
You mean the Mexicans have shut off the work visas?
And so now they have to go through the drug cartels. And we constantly hear on the news about pleading compassion for all of these people coming into America so that they can find better work. They can pick tobacco in eastern North Carolina or an apple orchard somewhere else. When these guys, their families are being split apart by the cartels and they try to come in, they take everything they have. Women are raped or worse, trying to get in, and that's being compassionate. We're supposed to have an open border policy to give compassion to these people who are being separated, and who knows what all is occurring. You only hear about it.
You know, there's an article in the Washington Post, Mark, reported on how in Mexico, returning Mexicans who have children born in the United States, which makes them supposedly dual nationals, the Mexican government said, we're not going to educate them or provide them with health care. They're Americans. Send them back to America.
Well,
I mean, this is remarkable.
It is, and it's so upsetting because, you know, we are told by the media that those of us who want to secure the border, we're the uncompassionate ones.
Yep.
And the ranchers would look at you and say, anybody that has any compassion whatsoever would come down there and secure that border and then come up with a system that can bring people in without having to go through the horrid conditions that are now facing Mexico. You look at the two political parties that have just been fighting each other in Mexico, the PRI and the PAN party, because both of them cater to the cartels.
Yep.
The Mexican army, it just depends which party wins as to which cartels they decide to go with. But the Mexican army harbors the cartels. The logistics are taken care of. They even provide security for drugs. You've got to think of the logistics to move the amount of drugs into America that they need. And the cartels cannot do this without collusion between the Mexican government, generals, and military members on the ground.
And we trained them and taught them our playbook when we took care of the Zetas, didn't we?
We sure did. And so you had
to arm them as well.
And poor Brian Terry, we went over to his murder scene.
Yep.
And a man that was put in another squad that he didn't train with, under strength, only with four members, and that the people that were coming at him, they actually told their numbers were much larger, and they were armed with AK-47s, and you send this team out with beanbags and a shotgun and some sidearms, and then turn them in the wrong direction.
And then, and then, of course, you had Jaime Zapata and his partner, who were killed in Mexico. They were unarmed, driving a government car that was clearly marked as an American government car. This was not a case of mistaken identity.
And so if we can, we talked about this earlier, if we can handle something easy, like looking at person A trying to cross border B and stopping them, then how in the world can we have any security in the interior of the United States?
And now we want to give them citizenship, as Obama keeps saying. And then the other story that, of course, Obama used to justify this was to say, well, Congress failed to act. So if Congress won't give me the Dream Act, I will basically create the Dream Act for a two-year temporary period. Congress did act. They voted down bad legislation. But I'm going to tell you where my anger is. I don't hear anything coming out of the Romney campaign calling Obama out on what he's doing. You know, look, this is not about racism, and I'm so sick, and you pointed it out about being compassionate. We keep hearing this lie, this mythology, Rudy Giuliani, who I really have issues with, and I could go on forever about why I disagree with Mr. Giuliani, America's mayor. Said, well, he's confident that if Romney wins, he will have he will implement immigration reform. You know, we are admitting over 1.1 million lawful immigrants every year into America. That's more than the rest of the world combined. We don't have enough jobs right now for Americans and those people who've been lawfully admitted for permanent residence. We don't know who many of these players are. And what doesn't seem to be told in the media that I talked about in my pieces that I've written for Fox News Latino, and I am grateful that they give me the opportunity to be heard in their websites. And I want you to know, and it's not that I'm dislocating my shoulder, I don't get paid for writing for Fox News Latino. I do it simply to try to provide my perspectives, as I am on this program, as I do when I write for CAPS, Californians of Population Stabilization, as I do on my website, talkborder.com, because I want the American people to understand the level of betrayal that we are facing at the hands of our own government from both political parties. You know, it was Jimmy Carter who started this nonsense where as immigration employees we were not allowed to use the term illegal alien, even though the word alien simply means any person who's not a citizen or national. If you can find an insult in that definition, folks, please send me an email. I want to know where the insult is. I mean, this is insanity. He wanted to make sure that all the illegals were counted for the census. This was about gerrymandering. Then we had Ronald Reagan give us the first amnesty, and I think disingenuously, and I know I'm going to anger people, but I don't care who I anger because I'm angry, claimed, I think disingenuously, that he had no idea that we never had enough people to enforce the laws. As the President of the United States, as the Commander-in-Chief, I assure you he did know. I testified before Congress in 2005 how while Congress appropriated enough money for George W. Bush to hire 800 new ICE agents and 2,000 new Border Patrol agents, he and his administration said, no, we don't want to hire that many. So he cut the new Border Patrol hires to 210. He cut the new ICE hires to 143, very specific numbers. So when I hear this nonsense about the administration not knowing, they knew. This was about pandering to those people who are making tons of money. I wrote an article for the Social Contract. It was called Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. I went into all the people who are literally and figuratively making out like bandits on exploiting illegal aliens. And then we hear this lie, this mythology, that it's anti-Latino to enforce the borders. It's anti-Latino and racist to enforce immigration laws. I want to be clear, folks. There is not a word in the immigration statutes that differentiate people by race, religion, or ethnicity. That is not at all what it's about. The most likely people to lose their jobs and or their lives to illegal aliens, in fact, are the members of the ethnic immigrant community, particularly the Latino community. The highest unemployment rates right now are to be found in the American black community and the American Latino community. So the idea that American voters who happen to be Hispanic, happen to be Latino, would vote for a candidate who want to open the floodgates so that more criminals can come in, more gang members can come in, more narcotics can come in, and more jobs can be given to illegal aliens competing with American citizens irrespective of their ethnicity, is something that's in the interest of the Latino community? there isn't any intelligent sense to be made from these ridiculous comments. The so-called journalists on Sunday morning sit before the altar of the television camera pontificating about how if Obama wants to win or if Mitt Romney wants to win, they have to do something about comprehensive immigration reform if they want this mythical Latino vote. First of all, to look at someone and say, well, he's a Latino voter, it's though they're monolithic, is profiling, and it's the most insidious form of profiling I could imagine. Everybody who's Jewish or Latino or black or purple or polka dot, we don't all vote the same way. And when you can point the finger and say, oh, Mike Cutler has a Jewish star, so we know who he's going to vote for, you are a bigot, you are a profiler. If you can say that anybody who's Hispanic or Latino will vote a certain way, that is profiling, it is bigotry, it is racism. I know many folks who happen to be Latinos who are furious that our borders aren't secured, who are furious that drugs are pouring into our communities and gangs are operating in their communities, if not assaulting them, then recruiting their children. So why on earth would Americans who happen to be Hispanic be thrilled to death that the current situation continues and, in fact, is accelerating under this administration? Have I lost my mind, Mark?
No, you haven't. It's right on the money, and that's you know, several of the things that, you know, that we have learned down there, and we hope to carry back across North Carolina and other areas, is that with having borders that are wide open, we're inviting everybody that could do us as much harm as you could ever imagine, and in fact they are. The communities that they're already in, the families that are being torn apart by drugs in this nation, the families trying to come here for a better life from other parts of Central and South America, OTMs as they're called, they're now being forced right into this same system of corruption and I mean just this crime and horrendous activity that most of us would not even want to even really want to even know about.
And you know, and what you should realize is this. First-generation criminals will generally tend to prey on the people within their own ethnic communities. We even saw it with the Italian mob. And then second and third generation become so comfortable in the country that they no longer operate just within their own ethnic group, but they branch out and everyone becomes an equal opportunity victim. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is encouraging transnational criminals from the four corners of the planet, not just Latin America. And let me tell you something else. As an immigration agent, I spent years where I investigated and arrested aliens violating our laws who didn't even speak Spanish. They came from Asia. They came from Africa. They came from the Caribbean. They came from Southeast Asia. They came from the Middle East. They came from Europe. They came from Canada. So this is not about race. This is not about religion. That's the way the politicians and the liars who are making all this money by exploiting people portray it, so that they can try to convince people, perhaps within the Latino community, oh, when people tell you they want the borders enforced and secured, you know what they're telling you? They don't like you. You're their enemy and they're your enemy. This is a tactic of divide and conquer. This is why I suspect that they want to have bilingual education, hoping that people within those communities won't read the same newspapers that their neighbors down the road who speak English are getting, so they will get a twisted view of the news. You know, as I started out saying to you when we began my show today, history has been defined as the news worth remembering. If people are not getting the news, then they don't know what's happening. It's very rare. I mean, certainly you were a witness to news where you were. You were a witness, in essence, to history in the making. But how many people can talk about significant instances where they witnessed the news event firsthand? I did in New York on 9/11, certainly. My neighbors who were at the towers saw even more than I did. But those people in North Carolina and Idaho and Chicago and California, when 9/11 happened, the only way they knew about it was by turning on their television or picking up a newspaper. If they didn't have newspapers, if they didn't have a radio, and if they couldn't see television, they would have no idea that airplanes were flown into towers and the buildings came down. So we depend on the news to know what's going on. that's why when you look at the old Soviet Union, you know, the two news agencies were Pravda and Izvestia, and they were all about propaganda. In George Orwell's 1984, they said that if you could eliminate the words from the vocabulary, you could eliminate the thoughts. This is about thought control. You need to have the words in order to have the concepts. By striking the word alien from the vernacular, it becomes more and more difficult to have an honest conversation. So they say they're undocumented migrants. They don't even want to use the word immigrant. Migrants, like people that just travel around. Well, we have migrant workers in America who are U.S. citizens and work on the farms, and they go from state to state, but they're Americans. So they want to use the word migrant. There's an outfit run by Doris Meisner, who used to be the head of immigration, called the Migration Policy Institute. And when I think of migration, I somehow think of the swallows returning to Capistrano or something. You're not even thinking about people, you see. It's artful use of language. Destroy the words, vilify the language. If you can get those words out of the vernacular, then you could end any kind of meaningful conversation. So we're told these are all immigrants. America was built by immigrants. And I like to tell people that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. You know, we all love to have company come and visit, but not when they come in through their bedroom window at 3 o'clock in the morning, don't you think?
Yeah, and so I have to go. I'm being summoned away, but one part of this that you can still focus, anyone can read in the documents at a sixth grade education, so it shouldn't be difficult. It's just to grab your little pocket constitution and read Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution. And that would be my homework assignment for people listening.
After you learn about Dolly Madison.
Yeah. If you go and read, and it's very short, it's only a few sentences, and then think about what's happening to the security of the United States, and then you would have to wonder, is there not some sort of criminal activity taking place between the federal government and with people across the world who are trying to do us harm?
You know, I made the point in my article for Fox News. I said that the purpose of our military is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. And when I speak in front of large groups of military officers, which I routinely do for a wonderful organization known as the Allen L. Fried Associates, Allen L. Fried Associates down in Washington, it's basically a speakers bureau that conducts seminars for the intelligence services, the military, and other federal agencies, and I've been doing their events for a number of years now. Whenever I'm in front of a bunch of military folks, I like to say to them, what's the point to the military? And, of course, they get a little frustrated and maybe angry with me initially, and then I say, well, isn't it true your primary mission is to keep our enemies as far from us as possible? I said, how can you do that when our borders only exist on maps and we already have millions, if not tens of millions, of foreign nationals scattered across our country and we don't know who's here, who they are, or why they're here? I have yet to have a single military official, whether he or she is a general or a colonel or an admiral, come up to me afterwards and say, oh, you're getting it wrong. They all tell me you're getting it exactly right. And here's the bottom line. Mark, what you did is an amazing service for America. All of your efforts, organizing the event, putting up with me when I was at your home. I look forward to heading back to North Carolina soon, hopefully next month. But to go to Arizona, to work with funds that were basically contributed by your neighbors to make what you're doing possible. I mean, that's an incredible effort that you are expending to try to educate our fellow Americans. Ultimately, when you complete this documentary, and I hope to be able to work with you on it when you get up to New York, I'm certainly looking forward to it. What's your ultimate plan for that documentary? Because I'm dying to see it.
Well, we hope to have it out by the beginning of September and put it into as much media hands as possible. And then on top of that, any group, primarily, you know me quite well, but we've
yes.
got coordinators all over the country that are in Tea Party or Tea Party affiliated type groups that are wanting to know more about this, and so it'll get into their hands. And
don't hold your breath about the media, by the way, Mark. I mean, I will tell you.
I know. We have some success with your local media, but as,
yep.
I've been warned by ranters and others. Something always happens when it gets up to a national level, whether it's Fox, CBS, or NBC. It doesn't matter. So something always happens and it gets kind of closed down. But we have, when you look at Tea Party groups, we've got so many groups that are now or continuing to come online all across the United States. It can get in their hands and into their town halls and into their local media. And so, in effect, we can get it around the country through that network.
Do you have a working name for it yet, or is that still too soon?
It's Invasion Freedom Under Fire.
Boy, great, powerful title. But you know, and it's funny, when Michelle Malkin first talked about what was going on as an invasion, I thought she was overstating it, even as an immigration officer that I was. But I got to tell you, I don't think it's an overstatement at this stage of the game.
Not anymore.
No, my concern is that we really have lost control over not only our borders, but our country. And this isn't about xenophobia, not in the least. Because what I have seen is the most likely victims of the crimes and the violence are the members of the ethnic immigrant and the ethnic minority communities inside the United States. Because the bad guys manipulate these people. They come here fleeing the crazy stuff back home, and then they find that the same thugs that kept them awake at night have joined them here and are threatening to do harm to family members in their home countries, whether it's Mexico, whether it's El Salvador, whether it's Russia, you know, whether it's China or Jamaica. They are threatening family members back home unless they do the bidding of the thugs that we've let in. This
That's
is not
right.
the American dream, folks, and this isn't about racism. I've seen too much violence in my career as an agent. I've helped to investigate too many homicides and too many crimes of violence, and this is about common sense protection. The immigration laws are supposed to do two things, protect American lives or protect American jobs. I'm just so excited about the project that you're working on, and I'm proud that you've asked me to assist you with it. I just can't wait for this thing to come to fruition.
Well, I thank you and hope anyone listening, you know, they know how to get in touch with you as we continue through this project and so it can get into as many hands as possible. And I thank you for being on the show. And if you don't mind, I'd like to say y'all a few times to those in New York and other areas because I like the word. I think it's okay to say y'all. And it's funny when people look at you weird when you say it. But that's
right. We should be celebrating the diversity that we all can enjoy as American citizens. And I don't think you get that angry with me when I remind you who won the Civil War either.
No,
you
and
knew
we
that
always
was coming,
get that
Mark.
Here. And you're not the only one. Whenever I teach history, and you know, people will constantly say, "Yes, but who won?"
Exactly. And you should know that when Mark was driving me through the beautiful rolling hills of North Carolina on our way to that event, at least three times, I guess, I had to remind you that morning.
Yeah, well, at least with America now, this is not 1861. We are back in 1775 trying to figure out how to, as Benjamin Franklin said, you have a republic. Now let's see if you can hold on to it.
Exactly right. Mark, I really want to thank you so much for visiting with me. I'd love to get back on your program. By the way, when and where does your program air? Because it was a blast being in the studio with you to do that show.
It's your Mark on History, and it's on WSIC, but we're having to change it because my teaching requirements of the real job have changed. And so the day that it was normally on, which is Monday, I'm going to be teaching day and night. So I'm having to switch it to another location, so you have to bear with me on that.
Well,
it may move to the weekend through the fall semester.
Well, you let me know when and where, and I'll be glad to put it up so you'll get as many listeners as possible. You do a great job on that show, I got to tell you.
Well, I appreciate it, and it was great talking with you, and I've got to run.
Okay, well, we'll send my best to your family. Have a great weekend. Thank you for the hard work you're doing on this documentary. Is there a website that goes with it?
There will be.
All right, will you keep me posted,
yet.
And I'll get it up there.
Yes. I'll
Mark,
send it
be well.
You.
Have a great weekend.
Okay, well, you too.
Okay. Thank
Bye.
You, Mark. All right, meanwhile, folks, I'm going to stay with you just for a couple minutes more just to kind of wrap up. What I want you to just bear in mind is what you've heard today. The fact that we have a border that is not secure, we finally have the tacit admission by Janet Napolitano, the woman who is in charge of DHS, an agency that I've come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender. This is not insignificant. It could not be more serious or more important. Failures to secure the borders and failures to enforce our immigration laws impact just about every challenge and threat that not only America faces, but that we as Americans face, whether it's unemployment, whether it's the threat of terrorism or crime, whether it's the flood of drugs coming into the United States, and it's believed that at least 70% of all crime in America, directly or indirectly, is related to that flow of drugs. So understand the problem. Now, the solution is not coming from Washington, at least not yet. And the solution won't come from Washington until we, the people, make our voices heard. That's what this is about. We live in a representative democracy. We need to make certain that the politicians who are elected to represent us do precisely that. They can't represent us if they don't hear from us in terms of what it is that we expect of them. When we go to a restaurant, we are very clear about the food that we want to eat. We're very clear about the way that we want it prepared. And if we are unhappy with the way the food has been prepared, then we send it back. And if that doesn't work, we leave. Today, we are basically telling the politicians, you can throw any crap you want on the plate and we will eat it. And we've been doing it for far too long. Those elected representatives work for us, we the people. We are bad employers. We are allowing elected representatives, if you will, to be insubordinate. They are doing what they believe is in their own best interest because their goal is to get the campaign contributions so that they can win their next election. In my world, campaign contributions, unfortunately, amount to little more than bribery. I don't know any other word for it. As a federal agent, I wasn't allowed to accept so much as a cup of coffee from somebody that I was interacting with in an official capacity. And we have politicians who are taking money with both hands, and I understand that there's no other way for them to do business right now. So I don't want to be careless about what I'm saying, because I don't believe that anybody can win elected office today without getting political contributions. But that money poisons the whole system. As somebody once pointed out, and my dad certainly quoted it often, he was my hero, he used to say to me, money is the root of all evil. So if politicians are expecting to get significant contributions from people or organizations, then they know that they are going to have to do something to justify the check that they're getting from whoever it is that's writing the check. What they need to know is that irrespective of how much money they may be getting, they will not succeed in winning election or re-election unless they understand and are made to understand that at the end of the day, their job is to represent us, we the people. Their job is to protect us from our enemies. It makes no sense to spend gazillions of dollars on the military and send our kids overseas where they get wounded or killed, where they come home physically or emotionally injured, crippled, if they come home at all. And meanwhile, we have no way of protecting our country up close and in person from those who would come here and do tremendous harm to us. Immigration needs to be seen as a component of national defense. It is not by accident that the enforcement components of immigration are under Homeland Security. At least, in theory, that's why they created the agency. We could have that discussion another day. Just for a little bit of brief background, and I made this point at the Fox News piece that I wrote, immigration used to be the responsibility of the Labor Department prior to the Second World War, because back then the greatest generation understood that if we flooded or allowed the labor market to be flooded by foreign workers, that wages would decline, that Americans would not only lose their jobs, but if they kept their jobs, would lose salaries and work for worse conditions, because they would be forced to compete with those who would settle for far less money and far worse conditions. And that's why the Labor Department used to run immigration right up to the Second World War, where they very wisely figured it out in Washington. We had a case involving German saboteurs who came here by submarine. They realized, you know what? We can't protect America if saboteurs and others who would do harm to us are able to enter the United States. So immigration went from the Labor Department to the Justice Department, the same place where the U.S. Marshals are and the FBI is, and back then DEA, or it was actually the Bureau of Dangerous Drugs, I guess, because the understanding was that this was a serious law enforcement issue involving nothing less than national security. And today we have a president and we have members of Congress who make it sound as though the immigration laws are insignificant. quite frankly, and not because of my own experience, and this is the issue I'm most familiar with, but just common sense. The immigration laws are among the most important laws that any country can have, because it's those laws, ultimately, that protect the lives and protect the jobs of the citizens of a country. It doesn't get any more serious than that. But the problem is that for far too long, most Americans have sat out the dance. This is why I always like to end my commentaries by reminding people that democracy is not a spectator sport, and indeed it is not. Democracy requires that the citizens educate themselves, and then with that education go out there and make certain that those who are elected to represent them understand what is expected of them, just the way any good employer makes certain that he or she provides clear direction for the employees that they hire. Those politicians, folks, are hired hands. Hired hands. Election day is coming. On election day, we have the right to hand out pink slips. They need to be reminded that there could be a pink slip in their future. That's the job that we, the people, must do. That's the job we, the people, must take seriously. I want to thank all of you for spending this last hour and, oh, I guess it's about 11 minutes, 12 minutes with me. Mark Hager is a great friend, great American. I'm very proud to be able to call him a good friend. And by the way, here's something interesting. He comes from the South. I come from the North. He comes from a rural area. I come from New York's biggest, from America's biggest city. He speaks with a Southern accent. I certainly don't. Yet we're great friends. And at the end of the day, as I pointed out at the beginning of the program, what's important is that we're both Americans. That's what should be uniting all of us. It's not about xenophobia. It's about common sense. I don't want to shut down immigration. I just want to make certain that it has integrity and that at the end of the day, it lives up to the two obligations of protecting our lives and protecting our jobs. And that's why we have or should have borders. That's why we should have an immigration system. We, the people, need to get our voices heard. Democracy, indeed, is not a spectator sport. Again, I urge you, please go to Californians for Population Stabilization website. Their terrific website is at capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org, out there in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara. And then there's also my two websites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com. Please, folks, take citizenship seriously. Get involved, and I hope you'll be listening next time to my program at the same place. For now, Mike Cutler signing off. Have a great weekend, everybody.